Hey, good evening. Canada. And then I'm off. Let's go. Yeah! Hello and welcome to Unbought and Unbossed Canadian Political News and Views. This is show number 106. Today is January the 28th, 2009. Unbought and Unbossed is an independent voice dedicated to presenting and discussing the political and social issues most relevant to Canadian citizens. This show contends that 9/11 is Canada's single most important issue because the self-inflicted attacks of 9/11 are being used as the justification for the current overthrow of our democratic and sovereign nationhood, turning Canada into a corporate-driven plutocracy. The official story of the 9/11 terror attacks in the ensuing war of terror are deeply troubling and are at the forefront of this radio program. I strongly encourage listeners to question what you think you know about today's world events and to analyze the motives behind our traditional news sources. That's the Idiot Box and your newspapers. Each week, new segments of Unbought and Unbossed offers further evidence for these incredible claims, which are either omitted or distorted by the mainstream corporate media. Turn your televisions off. You are being lied to and conditioned to accept this madness as our inevitable future. We must work to return the future of the human race to its rightful owners. That's you. Our ignore it and maybe it will go away on its own mentality is killing us. It has to end now. It is high time to wake up and to educate, to learn, to work together, and to find the courage to act on our love for one another. Some big words in there. However, freedom is at stake in this battle for truth and accountability. The prize is nothing less than the health of our collective human soul. Hey, the revolution has begun. I suggest you find your role. Thank you, Bruce Coburn. That is Actions Speak Louder. Right now we're listening to DJ Shadow, followed by Ashley McIsaac. Okay, so what do we have planned for show number 106? Well, it's going to be a little bit easy on me tonight. I'm primarily going to be playing audio clips that I've collected this last week. And, well, I guess not all of them are new, but let's see. Let's tell you about some of these audio clips. First off, I'm going to start with a message from Alex Jones. This is a message to the future. And he's talking to people 20, 30 years in the future. And pretty interesting stuff. Alex Jones, of course, is a documentarian. His websites, he has quite a few. Prisonplanet.com. What's the other one? Infowars. I'm not too sure what it is. Also, Alex Jones is going to be putting out a movie on the new President Obama, and Alex Jones has put together a lot of evidence that shows that, well, this new savior president is not that at all. He is just another stooge of the New World Order. So that'll be out in March. I'll be telling you more about that as it's getting closer to that date. Another audio piece we're going to look at is, what would you do with $3 trillion? This is a commercial advertising the website, 3trillion.org. Robert Greenwald and Brave New Films is the producer of this clip. So $3 trillion, that's the cost of this this Iraq invasion mess. And that is a fun piece. What would you do with $3 trillion? Okay, another audio piece. We're going to listen to Richard Williamson. He is a Roman Catholic bishop out of England. And, well, he has a lot to say about 9/11 being an inside job, and that it's time to wake up. I have more to tell you about this Richard Williamson, but I'll save that for when we get to that section. Okay, oh, another edition of Edmonton 9/11 Speakers Corner. These clips I've taken a little bit from the January 10th and the January 17th episodes, which in Edmonton there were rallies to support Gaza against the Israeli nastiness that's going on there, the occupation, and what a shame. As a matter of fact, we're going to be looking at quite a few clips concerning what's going on there. Firstly, is one called Israelis for Peace. The organization is December18th.org, and I realize that was last month, but this commercial piece comes from that website, and it's to free the Shemitah. What that word means is they're Israel's young conscientious objectors. So that Shemitah are Israeli high school students who have been imprisoned for refusing to serve in an army that occupies the Palestinian territories. December 18th marked the launch date of a global campaign to release them from jail. The website is December18th.org. Another one coming from Congressman Ron Paul in the States, and he reminds us that Hamas was created by Israel, and that is why, it's one of the reasons why the U.S. should not support Israel when they are clearly breaking numerous international laws. You know, it's really interesting. The states right now are trying to blame organizations that they too helped create, you know, Al-Qaeda. So that's, you know, we have kind of a copycat thing here. So another, this next one is so frightening. This is from President Obama. It is taken June of last year while he was on the campaign trail. And he was speaking at the AIPAC policy conference. Now, they are probably the largest pro-Israel lobby in the States, which stands for the American Israel Public Affairs Committee. And my goodness, this Obama says some things that are absolutely ludicrous. For example, that the U.S.-Israel bond is unbreakable, regardless of anything and forever. That is the insanity that Obama spoke. How can you say that about a nation who's, you know, if it was a free nation, you know, the governments change and, the shift, you know, depending on who's elected and whatnot. But no, that's not the case. Obama, as did Hillary Clinton, said that, you know, forever and ever, Israel is, you know, their foreign policy is ours, and we are closer than family, is basically the position. But if you want to be a puppet president, that's one of the things that you have to say, really, unfortunately, isn't it? Okay, yet another audio piece I'm going to play for you, and there is a show on CHLY, Monday evenings from 7 to 8, it's the Dr. Lake Show. It deals on mental health issues, and they were discussing happiness. And, well, I called in as an anonymous caller, but I called in as an advocate for social justice issues, and I expressed my frustrations of not making a larger difference. You know, I got this radio show to turn absolutely everyone in the 901 to 911 truth, and it's a, when I look at it in that sense, it is a losing battle, because that certainly hasn't happened. So I don't want to be pessimistic, even though that's kind of where the research points to. However, there are some really good suggestions by Dr. Lake and her usual co-host, Linda Ogle, and these women had a lot of helpful pointers for me to remember, and other truth advocates, that, you know, we need to remember the smaller victories as well, and, you know, to not set your ambitions too high, as I just explained how I had. But I don't know, is defeating the New World Order too high? Yeah. Anyway, so I'm going to play that clip. So that is dedicated to my truthers who, are big softies on the inside, you know, and this dealing with the corruption on such a large scale, I'm sure is tough on all of you, and for some it's real tough. Also, time allowing, depending on phone calls and how much I jabber on, I've got a Jim Mars lecture. This happened in San Francisco 2004, perhaps 2005. It is rather long, but is well worth it. Jim Morris is a free thinker, a researcher, a journalist, author of numerous books. You will be impressed with Jim Morris. So that is some of the, just some of the many audio clips you're going to hear tonight. I'm going to start it off with the Alex Jones, A Message to the Future. And he does remind you that I'm not kidding about this. He spent a lot of years researching this New World Order and how it is manipulating governments and taking them over through, you know, various trade groups and these international monetary banks and whatnot. So let's give that a listen. And if you're a little bit miserable, well, after that, I'm going to play a song called I'm Miserable. Right? Right. But it's by Ray DiArino. And he's a comedian. This came out in 1972. And I don't think this guy did anything else. But this comedy album is kind of funny. So that's what we're going to get after that. So Alex Jones and then a comedy piece, I'm Miserable. There we go. You're listening to CHLY 101.7 FM in Nanaimo, Radio Malaspina. If you want to catch us online, we are at www.chly.ca, where you can listen streaming live. If you're going to do that, make sure you put the setting on the lo-fi. Don't hog up too much bandwidth. So that's that. See you in a few.
So I just want this kind of to be a message from the past, and then future people hear this, when things like what you're hearing now are illegal, and when it's totally clear what you face. I want you to know, if you don't resist, it's only going to get worse. It's not going to get better. And you will realize that you're the leaders, and you will realize that it's up to you to take action with God's help when you're really against the wall. So this is my message to you in the future. A lot of people came before me, and I'm here, and I came before you. And I'm telling you, you don't have a choice. The bio attacks they've launched against you, the herding into the cities, every few years a more horrific event, cocktails of attacks, everything you've gone through. Now you've got to spread the word to your fellow man. Now everyone will see the truth now that you're in lockdown prison cities. And I'm speaking to the secret police of the future. Your mother, your father, your children are dying from the bioweapons. You're dying from the engineered cancers. I know that information is restricted to you now, but in our age, we were able to access that information before it had been erased. There was once a time of goodness. There was once a time of wholesomeness. I know many of you in the future will, at many levels, not be able to consciously understand what I'm saying, or will be emotionless because you've been given the vaccines to, quote, cure you from drug use that attacked the areas of your brain associated with endorphin absorption. And so many of you have been lobotomized, but you can pray to God, and God can heal anything. I'm sorry that we didn't fight hard enough for you, and I'm sorry that we didn't do everything we could, but I want you to know I tried. And I prayed every day that God would make me stronger and make me not be such a weak, pathetic blob. But we were decadent. Our forefathers gave us such a great country and so much liberty that we became drunk on it. I know your future system is basically computer-operated and is fire and forget. I know that it's all automated. But there's got to be a way out of it for humanity. There's got to be a way out of it. If you could even understand me, I know the language has been changed drastically. And I know access to what the language previously was has become restricted. But please, research. It was once better. It was once freer. If you're listening to me 20, 30 years in the future, and there's only a few hundred million of us left, just please fight against the New World Order. You'll find your enemies. You'll find the people that constructed this. You'll find them in their compact wilderness retreats. That's where you'll find your enemies. That's where you'll find the people that did this. In the future, they're going to become so arrogant, they're basically going to even forget about the people in their extermination centers. And there's got to be some way for people within the system who've got enough power, who are outside the automated grids, to be able to somehow resist this. Again, I know it's hard for you in the future to even understand me. By the way, folks, this isn't a joke or a game, people here in the present hearing this. This is what's going to happen, you buffoons. God help us. Why did it have to be like this? Why did we have to have... What kind of planet is this where psychopathic murdering killers run everything and have just lovingly, with care, craftily waited and built this grid and incrementally turned the heat up on us?
I'm miserable, right? Well, I got a right to be. I get up this morning, my alarm clock didn't go off. I was late. I go into shave, I cut myself. I'm miserable, right? I go into work, my boss says, this is the fourth time you've been late this week. You're fired. I said, but boss, he said, you're fired. I'm miserable, right? I go down and meet my girl. She finds out I ain't got a job. She want nothing to do with me. I'm miserable, right? Then I'm walking down the street. I see a sign in the window. It said, y'all miserable, right? I said, right. It said, try some new life. So I buy a bottle. Well, now I'm going to take one of these life pills. I'm still miserable, right? Maybe I'll take two more. I'm still miserable, but I'm not as miserable as I was a few moments ago. As a matter of fact, I feel a little better right about now. As a matter of fact, I feel kind of groovy. As a matter of fact, I'm high on life.
Life, the little pill that helps you get through those days when you feel miserable, right? Get high on life.
That sounds just a little bit outdated, but yes, indeed. 1972, I'm miserable. That's Ray DiArino. So there we go. Let's carry on. Okay, we're going to get to this. What would you do with $3 trillion? The website is 3trillion.org. This commercial for the website comes to us from Robert Greenwald, who's done a number of films. Looking at war and, let's see, he also did the Walmart movie and the cost of Iraq. What the hell's the name of that movie? I didn't really like it. It was looking at the contractors. I mean, I agree with everything that was said, but it doesn't take it far enough. It's, you know, it's kind of the Naomi Klein thing. You know, it doesn't get into, you know, 9/11, which is kind of frustrating. It takes you halfway there. But nonetheless, this is a fantastic trailer. And then after that, there's that silly movie Team America World Police. And they've got a song from there that's... So this song we're going to play, it's America, F, yeah. Let me see, Trey Parker, Matt Stone, and Pam Brady are the persons behind this Team America World Police. So we'll get to that. Okay, so I will see you in a minute. I better click that mature content warning. That F word is going to come up a little bit here. So there we go. See you shortly.
The following contains mature subject matter and may not be suitable for some listeners. Listener discretion is advised.
What would you do with $3 trillion? The $3 trillion shopping spree is your chance to find out. Want to reign over your own island nation? Go right ahead. Or maybe fund research that will cure a deadly disease. It's up to you. You could even wage an endless war that will cripple America's economy. With the $3 trillion shopping spree, anything's possible. Bill in Los Angeles bought 100,000 luxury yachts, 20,000 sprawling estates, and 650,000 private islands. Mary in Michigan gave health care to all Americans and still had $2.8 trillion left over. George B. in Washington started an illegal war that resulted in 151,000 dead Iraqi civilians. Gary in Indiana bought 1.5 billion pounds of beluga caviar. Debbie in New York bought 500 schools in her home state and still had $2,987 billion left for school supplies. Donald R. in Arlington, Virginia, destabilized an entire region and displaced 4 million innocent people. What will you do with $3 trillion? Go to www.3trillion.org and spend, spend, spend.
All right, you guys, I hate to break up this little party, but there's still a lot of bad guys out there.
Well, then let's go show the bad guys the police are back in force.
Fuck yeah.
Fuck yeah.
America! 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 Fuck yeah! Fuck yeah!
Freedom is the only way, yeah.
And the rest of your game is through. Cause now you have something to do. America! Fuck yeah!
All share is the hope for tomorrow.
Fuck yeah!
Hold on!
Fuck yeah! Fuck yeah!
Baseball!
Fuck yeah! Fuck yeah! Fuck yeah! Fuck yeah! Fuck yeah! Fuck
yeah! Okay, there it is. So that's What Would You Do With $3 Trillion? And America, F yeah, that's from the movie Team America World Police. A little bit of fun there. Let's see, let's move on. This is a show full of various audio clips, as you are as you're becoming aware of. Let me see, let's move on to this Roman Catholic bishop, Richard Williamson. Well, he has a lot to say on 9/11 being an inside job. Now, he might be the highest minister that I'm aware of that has spoken out publicly on this. However, this Richard Williamson has also spoke out on a couple other things, and that's unfortunate. And I'll tell you a little bit more about that after you hear this clip. So, if I'll get to that in a sec. Let's just put the clip on. So this is Richard Williamson, a Roman Catholic bishop, talking about 9/11. Give it a listen. I agree with most everything he says on 9/11. Not so much on other things this fellow has said, but we'll get into that in 5 minutes. See you then.
It's not ruling us today. It's not a party as brutal, as openly brutal as the Stalinist Russia was. It's not it's not yet a police state imposing upon us to say that 2 and 2 are 5. But the police state, of course, every single one of you knows, is certainly closing in, both here and in the United States, for sure and certain. The police state took a great leap forward with 9/11. That's for certain. And I hope none of you believe that 9/11 is what it was presented to be. It was, of course, the two towers came down, but it was absolutely for certain not two airplanes which brought down those two towers. They were professionally demolished by a series of demolition charges from top to bottom of the towers. If you doubt that, look up on the internet 911mysteries.com. I mention this, you may find I keep mentioning this in sermons. Why do I keep mentioning this in sermons? Because truth is at stake. Because if the towers were pulled down by two aeroplanes, then the party is virtually in control. The party has got through the people's minds. The party can push over all kinds of propaganda and lies in its media. And if the people swallow the lies, they will be enslaved. Our Lord said, the truth will make you free. The corollary of which is, lies will enslave you. At the moment, the whole world is being told lies. by these media, by the government, by the politicians, by the universities, by the teachers, and worst of all, alas, by the cardinals and the highest authorities in the church. We are being enslaved by lies, and a tremendous, the most outstanding global lie of recent times to enslave the minds of all of us, or to deceive the minds of all of us, and thereby to enslave us by making us all believe that the police state is a good thing and a necessary thing, which is why the police state has advanced in leaps and bounds as it has. The most extreme example is 9/11. And that's a classic example of an enslaving lie. 2 and 2 are 5. Those towers were brought down by 2 aeroplanes, and it was an aeroplane that struck the Pentagon. That's totally impossible, that an aeroplane struck the Pentagon. A commercial aeroplane has a very soft nose, because you don't have a nose of titanium and steel. That's not what an aeroplane could fly with. If you tried taking off with that, it would nosedive immediately and lift it off the airport if it had such a heavy nose. The nose of a commercial aircraft is very soft. It's just a little aluminium covering the radar of the plane, which is usually up in the nose. The nose is very soft. Whatever hit the Pentagon went through 6, punched its way through 6 of the 10 18-inch stone walls between outside the Pentagon and its inner courtyard. There are 5 rings of buildings, each with an outer and an inner wall, and whatever hit the Pentagon went through 6 of those 10 walls before it came to a stop. The photographs are there, the evidence is there, as clear can be. The newspapers, of course, did not publish those photographs, but they do exist. Then it can only have been a guided missile which struck the Pentagon. Can only be. Guided missiles have a tough nose, titanium and steel, with an explosive charge of 2 charges. 1 charge to penetrate the wall that they're penetrating, and then the second charge to explode inside, and that's exactly what the photographs show, with a fire running up and down inside the outer ring of the Pentagon. So we were all of us told, and I hope none of you still believe, that it was the work of 3 commercial airliners piloted by 19 Mohammedans, of whom, as you may well know, 7 are at least are known to be alive and walking around. Lies, lies, lies. And that's where it's at. Lies or truth. And you will have today some decent non-Catholics, like George Orwell, a decent and intelligent man, some decent men who realize that what is at stake here, even before, in a certain sense, even before religion is the problem, even before God is in question, there's truth. Does there exist truth? Is there truth?
Okay, there we go. That was Roman Catholic Bishop Richard Williamson. And there we go. A lot of interesting things to say about 9/11 being an inside job. I certainly agree with that overall view. However, last year, Richard Williamson got into a little bit of trouble after voicing his views on something that, well, it's really... If you're going to talk about this subject, look out. You better get your facts straight. This is on the Holocaust. And it was in an interview with a Swedish television station. It was conducted November 2008, aired January, so January this year. So he generated widespread protests and risks prosecution in Germany, where the interview was conducted, and where Holocaust denial is illegal and usually punished by imprisonment of up to 5 years. Now, that's for denial. Now, this Richard Williamson is not denying the whole thing. However, I'll read a quote. He says, "I believe that there were no gas chambers. I think that 200,000 to 300,000 Jews perished in Nazi concentration camps, but none of them by gas chambers." So that is what he is denying. And that's, Well, from the little bit that I know, that is not the case. Zyklon B, it is a cyanide-based insecticide, is apparently what was used. And, you know, it's interesting, starting in 1929, the U.S. Used it. They sprayed the clothes of Mexican immigrants entering the U.S. In the U.S. I'm reading a book right now by Jim Morris. It's The Rise of the Fourth Reich, being the American Empire right now. And let me read you really quickly. Oh, first off, this book is a revisionist telling of World War II, as in Follow the Money Trail. And you get to you get pretty deep when you do that. That's going as about as far as you can go. So here we are looking at page 214. After the war, 24 lower IG Farben executives stood trial at Nuremberg for crimes against humanity, including the building and maintenance of concentration camps and the use of slave labor. Schmitz, now Schmitz is the IG Farben chief Hermann Schmitz, who served as the Chase president for 7 years prior to the war. And Chase, we're talking about, of course, the Rockefeller Chase Manhattan Bank. And they're getting some bailout money right now. Interesting. So Schmitz, anyways, was convicted of war crimes in 1948 at Nuremberg, but served a mere 2 years in prison. Although it was under Schmitz's leadership that the giant chemical combine produced and distributed the notorious Zyklon B gas used for human experimentation in Nazi concentration camps. So that's some of what I know about that, and it's unfortunate that this Richard Williamson, he must have information that other people don't have. Now, this whole gas thing is somewhat debatable. There's, I don't agree with what Williamson is saying, and from the little bit I know, there certainly were gas chambers. But there is also some evidence suggesting otherwise. So that is the camp that this Richard Williamson falls into. But I do back up what he has to say about 9/11. So that's interesting. You know, you have to do your own research. You know, you can never believe one person 100%. And do your own research. That is very, very important. Okay, let's move on to the next segment, which is the Campus Community Update. Actually, it's going to be the Events Update. So what do we have for you tonight? Let me remind you that you are listening to CHLY 101.7 FM in Nanaimo. And this is the Unbought and Unbossed Show. I am your host, Raymond. Okie dokie. Paul Manley, his movie is finally out. I've had Paul on my show a couple times, a couple weeks back, not too far ago, in regard to the movie that is now making its premiere. He's calling it You, Me, and the SPP, Trading Democracy for Corporate Rule. I have seen a rough, partly edited version and very, very impressed. So it is finished now. As a matter of fact, Unbought and Unbossed is a financial contributor to this film to help it get made, for Paul to buy the expensive clips to make the quality of the film that much better. So this is coming up February the 5th, Thursday. So that is next Thursday at 7 p.m. And son of a gun, I work evenings. I work Wednesday evenings. I'm not very happy about that. So that is at the Vancouver Island University Theater, Building 310. So very important, looking at the Security and Prosperity Partnership, Trading Democracy for Corporate Rule, and that is exactly what it is. That is fascism. So well done, Paul. I'm sure the final edition is going to be fantastic, because I sure like the rough version. Hey, welcome back. Very nice. So that is a local production. I know Simon's part of that. All three of the reggae shows on CHLY are taking part in supporting that, and good for them. That's pretty neat. Okay, moving. Oh, hey, I know. Let's get John Lennon speaking in the background again. So that was the campus community update. Actually, it was kind of more of a events update. Entertainment update. which has been brought to you in part by the financial supporters of CHLY and this show, Victoria 911 Truth, Edmonton 911 Truth, and Fraser Valley 911 Truth. So well done to those three truth-telling groups who clearly understand the importance of independent media, and that's what you're getting right now. Okay, let's move on. I've got a somewhat local couple songs here by the Dayglo Abortions, a punk band. They're still around today. They've been, oh boy, maybe 25 years now. So I'm going to play two of their songs. One is I'm My Own God. And the lyrics are, in case you can't figure them out, they're quite interesting. I can do whatever I want because I'm my own God. It doesn't matter if it's right or wrong, because I'm my own God. That's the entire lyrics. And that can be taken a couple different ways. And, you know, I can do whatever I want, which I would like to think that that's a very positive message. That's, you know, get out, take one little baby step after the next, and hopefully you're going to see a lot of progress. Because you are your own God. And then that second part saying, well, it doesn't matter if it's right or wrong. And that's interesting, and I like that because not everyone thinks the same way. You know, what's right to one isn't for another, you know, and vice versa. So that's an interesting perspective. And let me see, I had Kevin Annett on my show a couple, 2 weeks ago, and he quoted a president, I'm not remembering which one, perhaps Lincoln. And the quote was, when I do good, I feel good. When I do bad, I feel bad. And I think, you know, probably 99% of us feel that way. But, you know, there's some psychopaths out there that don't feel that way. And, you know, they're the captains of industry. They are the military-industrial complex. And that's who's running the show behind the scenes. So, okay, so there's that song. And then there is another one. Proud to be a Canadian. And it's interesting about the Dayglo Abortions. In 1988, their record label, which is Fringe at the time, I think now they're with God Records. Anyways, they were prosecuted for distribution of obscene material. They were eventually found a not guilty verdict. But an image or a word, you know, especially if it's an artistic, you know, a drawing or something like that, I'm not too sure how that can be obscene. You know what I do think is obscene is the nightly news. That whole giant package of lies, that to me is obscene, and that really frustrates me. Talking about obscene, if I'm going to lay this into perspective here, because there is a line in here which is, well, if you did not know how it was intended, you would likely find it very offensive. And what it's talking about is the quality of life for many of the First Nations peoples in Canada. They have found a creative way to suggest that the First Nations people, well, are getting screwed. So, there you go. There's your warning, and I did play the mature subject matter content, so that covers me there. So here we are, Dayglo Abortions, punk band out of Victoria, BC. Here we go.
I'm the boy! Ouch. I bet that hurts. Seems that a lot of people are getting that done to them right now. The indigenous persons aren't the only ones anymore. Well, not that they ever were the only ones. Okay, there it is. Proud to be a Canadian. So they're having a little bit of fun at, let's see, who are they poking fun at? Canadians and beer. Let me see. Trudeau and his wife, that thing with Jagger. And then, of course, a little political take on First Nations issues. Okay, let's move. You know, that reminds me of censorship. And I'm really against a word, you know, a string of letters being too offensive for someone. And I don't know, independent radio is, you're certainly not going to hear that song or this 9/11 perspective on corporate media. And isn't that censorship? It sure is. Yes, indeedy. Okay, let's move on right now to another edition of Edmonton 9/11 Speaker's Corner. This is concerning rallies that have been held the last 2 weeks in Edmonton downtown to show their support for the people of Gaza and to let the Canadian politicians know that it is not okay to not for the Canadian government to not say to Israel that this is not acceptable. It is illegal. You are doing things that you shouldn't be doing. A lot of the weapons, apparently, they're using phosphorus. Just a whole lot of nasty stuff. Let me see. There's a statistic I heard when the states were getting ready to invade Iraq. They said, you know, Iraq is in a violation of 16 the United Nations rules. I'm not too sure what they're called. However, Israel at the time was in violation of, I believe, 47. So, you know, there you go. Who owns the media, right? So here we are. Doug Brinkman with Edmonton 9/11 Truth Speakers Corner. These took place January 10th, January 17th. I've borrowed a speaker from each of those videos. You know, you can, well, for the pieces that have videos here, which is quite a few of them, I do post those links on my website. So let me give you the address to that. I'm at unbossed.livejournal.com, and that is a rather simple journal-style website, but it does have links to what was on my show, as well as the link to listen to my show or to download it if you missed an episode. So there you go, unbossed.livejournal.com. And another website I suggest you visit is Edmonton911truth.com. And here is their Speaker's Corner.
Okay for Canada just to base it upon the 9/11 Commission, the Bush 9/11 Commission, as to what happened that day, or do you think Canada should look into this 9/11 itself?
I think Canada for sure should have looked into the situation themselves. This is a huge undertaking. If you're going to go to war with the people, they say they're peacekeeping, but really all they are is a mercenary army for the United States for free. And if you're going to be doing that kind of a thing, you better know why you're there. We live in a very deceptive world, and you better find out what's going on. When you've got a building like Building 7 that collapses in under 6 seconds from corner to corner with no plane hitting it and only small fires, you better be asking some questions before you send your military into another country. But we don't see that happening because we live in such a controlled world that, and the people are so passive. But I tell you what, I believe Canada has no business in Afghanistan. Where Canada should have been, Canada should have placed themselves between Israel and Palestine. Then they would have been a peacekeeping nation. They're not a peacekeeping nation. They're a military mercenary army up for hire for whoever pay the highest bid.
It seems like that. This is what's going on here today. There's a rally here in support of ending the atrocities in Gaza. Right now, the crowd here are out marching around. Do you have any opinions about this situation in Gaza? What's going on?
Well, you've got to feel sorry for the people that are in Palestine. I mean, they're surrounded. Then when somebody fires a few homemade rockets out, that's considered an atrocity that they can come in with mega military and slaughter people? I don't think so. 13 dead on the Israeli side. 3 of them they killed themselves. So 10 dead on the Israeli side, and 1,000 plus, and 5,000 wounded, most of them civilians. They've hit the UN 3 times. They've hit schools. They've hit hospitals. How many accidents can you have?
Canada lost 24 Canadians on 9/11. It's retribution for 9/11 that the former Defense Minister Gordon O'Connor says that we were over there for. We've lost 108 soldiers now for this retribution. We countless Afghani innocent citizens, women, children have lost their lives over this retribution. How many more deaths do we need to have to quench the thirst of this retribution that Canada so eagerly wants?
Well, I think the thing we really have to look at here is that, you know, they tell the Canadian people, they even tell the Canadian soldiers that what they are is actually peacekeeping and they're actually helping the people and this and that and the other thing. But our own soldiers only stay in their own camps. When they do go out of our camps, that's how they end up killed, because they're out on the roads. How do they know they're helping anybody? You know, how do they know that they're anything more than just extra army personnel on the ground? I don't really believe that they do.
Obama's going to send in 30,000 additional U.S. troops to help the situation in Afghanistan. Do you think he's doing the right thing, or is this just going to intensify the problem?
Well, I believe that the American government has basically been infiltrated on both parties, and although the government has now changed in the United States, the same people are still in power. Nothing's going to change. Everything's going to stay exactly the same. It doesn't matter whether the Democrats or the Republicans win, the same people are in power. You could take a list of the Clinton administration and compare it to the new list of the Obama administration, and you'll find out it's probably 80% the same people. So it'll be business as usual.
I think so, too. Can you tell me what's going on here today? What is taking place at this rally?
Okay.
What this is all about?
So we are at Churchill Square here in the heart of downtown Edmonton, between City Hall and the Public Library. And we've come out in big numbers to support innocent Palestinians who are being victimized in Gaza by the Israeli army. And we just want our voices to be heard and be counted, that us as Canadians, regardless of ethnicity or religion, are in full support of innocent Palestinians fighting for the right to exist. Israel already exists. Israel has borders. It has embassies. It has a society that's functioning. But when we look at Gaza, when we look at the West Bank, these are people who have been displaced from their lands in 1948, in 1967, and they have no existence except in a refugee camp. So we are here to voice our objection to Canadian government's silence, and I would go as far as say complicity in what's happening in Gaza, in the genocide in Gaza.
Has the media been fair in reporting both sides of the story?
The media, I don't want to make any blanket statements about the media, but as usual, the mainstream media has been silent.
As so far as the events of 9/11, do you think Canada, the United States, has done enough to uncover the crimes of 9/11?
My take on 9/11 personally, whether it was an inside job, whether the questions surrounding 9/11, my take on it is that whether it's the Canadian government, the U.S. government, or other so-called, you know, in quote-unquote Western governments and multinational corporations, they supported, before 9/11, they were supporting injustice in this world. They were supporting occupation. They were supporting unjust wars. They were supporting genocide. Nothing changed with 9/11. After 9/11, they continued to support injustice in this world, even more so. So I think it can be useful to look at 9/11 and the events of 9/11 and what happened, whether it was an inside job. Obviously, there are a lot of questions surrounding this issue. A lot of independent, unbiased people, university professors, a lot of engineers, a lot of physicists are questioning this. You can go online and find out. You know, politicians in Europe are questioning this. Unlike we don't see this in North America, elected officials in Europe are questioning the events of 9/11. So some benefit can come out of it, but we don't have to disagree about whether it was an inside job or it was an outside job or what have you. We have to be practical. There was injustice in this world. There was open, not conspiracy, there was open war declared against people by certain governments and corporations in this world prior to 9/11, even more so post 9/11.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Okay, very nice. Another edition of Edmonton 9/11 Speakers Corner. And noise in the background, but of course they were at a public rally. So well done to that. You know, if there's any other truth-seeking, become-the-media persons out there, I would sure like to listen and play your clips. You know, they can be something similar to what Doug is doing in Edmonton, or something completely new that you've made up yourself. So please keep that in mind. If you are out there becoming the media, send things my way. Let me give you my my email address. You can get a hold of me at Raymond Truth Radio. That's Raymond Truth Radio at hotmail.com. So let's move on. This is a Frank Zappa song. I'm the slime, and slime, that is the propaganda that you get on your television every night. And there's a brilliant clip you can watch on YouTube of Frank Zappa. He was on it was concerning censorship, and he was on, I guess it was kind of like a crossfire, hardball type discussion show on, I'm pretty sure it was CNN, maybe 20 years ago. And Frank, it was very clear, had absolute contempt for the monkeys that were, these propagandists, these shills that are, you know, pumping this phony reality. And Frank made it very clear that these guys were just fascist propagandists. So that's a good clip. Maybe I'll include that link on my website so you can check that out. But we're going to hear his song, I'm the Slime. There we go. That was Frank Zappa, I'm the Slime. Thanks to Alice for sending that one to me. And let's move on to looking at the Israeli-Gaza situation here. I've got three clips coming up concerning that issue. The first one here is a commercial from the website December18th.org. And it's Free the Shemisti, sorry for the enunciation there, but that word means Israel's young conscientious objectors, and these people are Israeli high school students who have been imprisoned for refusing to serve in an army that occupies the Palestinian territories. So let's listen to that. And then Ron Paul, the congressman, one of the few outspoken persons who reminds us that Hamas was created by Israel. And that is one of the reasons why the U.S. should not be supporting Israel, as they are clearly breaking numerous international laws. So let's move into that, and we'll see you shortly.
This is Cascadia Public Radio.
My name is Sahal Baldi. I'm 18. I'm a Shministit.
My name is Yuval Aron. I'm 19 years old. I'm a Shminist.
My name is Omer Goldman. I'm 19 years old. I'm a Shministit.
My name is Maya Yechieli Wind. I'm 19. I'm a Shministit.
Shministi means 12 graders in Hebrew.
We are Israeli conscientious objectors. That means we refuse to serve in the Israeli army.
Because I'm a Shministit.
My name is Yuval Aron. I'm 19 years old. I'm a Shminist.
My name is Omer Goldman. I'm 19 years old. I'm a Shministit.
My name is Maya Yechieli Wind. I'm 19. I'm a Shministit.
Shministi means 12 graders in Hebrew.
We are Israeli conscientious objectors. That means we refuse to serve in the Israeli army.
Because they are occupying another people, the Palestinians.
Palestinian kids like us can't go to school because of checkpoints.
Or even get health care.
Many young Palestinians go to prison for no reason.
A lot of them have been killed.
Or their homes demolished.
The government says this policy is keeping us safe.
But denying Palestinians their basic human rights puts us all in danger.
It's illegal.
It's wrong.
It's immoral.
It's against my personal beliefs.
It's against my basic values.
It's against my values. That is why we are conscientious objectors.
That's why we're conscientious objectors.
That's why we're conscientious objectors.
That's why I'm a conscientious objector. We are Shministi.
We are Shministi.
We are Shministi.
I am a Shministit.
We're being jailed for refusing to serve in the army.
We need your support.
Please sign the letter
and tell all your friends. Palestinians, Israeli, Jews, Muslims, Christians, atheists, everyone.
We all need to stand together.
Against violence, against repression, no matter who does it.
Take a stand with us for peace,
coexistence,
and real future for children like us, everywhere. Sign the letter today.
Sign the letter today.
Please sign the letter today.
Please sign the letter today.
Okay, very nice. There are some brave young people standing up for what they know is right, for what everyone knows is right. So good for them. And that reminded me of an announcement that I forgot to tell you at the beginning of the show, is that Face to Face with Jack Etkin, the third episode, is now on Google Video. So this show is... Well, let me see. We've had a 9/11 truth activist. We've had an expert in electroradiation and what that's doing to humans and the brain. And the third one, which is hasn't been shown on Shaw television in the Victoria area. However, it is now on Google Video. And it features an interview with U.S. war resistor Cliff Cornell. So I will link that interview at my website, and very sadly, shortly after taping this segment, Cliff Cornell received notice that he is going to be sent back to the States to more than likely go to jail for his refusal to take part in, killing innocent people. So, announcement news, Kevin Annett. He's the former minister-turned-whistleblower. He was on this show 2 weeks ago. He apparently was interviewed on Alex Jones's radio program today. That's pretty exciting. Hopefully I can get a clip of that to play for you in the future weeks. Also, I have a special happy birthday wish to Emily, my niece. She turns 7 this Friday. Uncle loves you very, very much. And my activism... I guess as witnessed through my radio show, is dedicated to my two nieces, Emily and Caitlin, and that is this entire show, not just today, but the whole thing is dedicated to them, and, well, more than just to them, but to all the children out there, to the next generation, and I'm doing my best to... make this crazy little planet a little bit better than when I came in and found it, and that is my promise to these young people. And so happy birthday, Emily. Big 7. Way to go. So let's carry on now. Let's get on to Ron Paul speaking in Congress about the background of Hamas.
Gentlewoman from Florida is recognized.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. I'd like to yield 2 minutes to the gentleman from Texas, Dr. Paul.
The gentleman is recognized for 2 minutes. Thank you, for yielding and ask unanimous consent to revise and extend my remarks.
Without objection.
Madam Speaker, I rise in opposition to this resolution, not because I am taking sides and picking who the bad guys are and who the good...
That, we're getting a lot of kind of a electronic feedback sound there, aren't we? I haven't decided if I want to play the whole thing. It's only another 2 minutes long, but, I don't know if that's intelligible to you or not. Let's hear a couple more seconds, and I'll decide if we're going to carry on with that.
Guys are, but I'm looking at this more from the angle of being a United States citizen, an American. And I think resolutions like this really do us great harm. In many ways, what's happening in the Middle East, and in particular with Gaza right now, we have some moral responsibility for both sides in a way, because we provide help and funding for both Arab nations and Israel. And so we definitely have a moral responsibility, and especially now today, the weapons being used to kill so many Palestinians are American weapons, and American funds essentially are being used for this. But there's a political liability, which I think is something that we fail to look at, because too often there's so much blowback from our intervention in areas that we shouldn't be involved in. You know, Hamas, if you look at the history, you'll find out that Hamas was encouraged and really started by Israel, because they wanted Hamas to counteract Yasser Arafat. You said, well, yeah, that was better then and served its purpose, but we didn't want Hamas to do this. So then we as Americans say, well, we have such a good system, we're going to impose this on the world. We're going to invade Iraq and teach people how to be Democrats. We want free elections. So we encourage the Palestinians to have a free election. They do, and they elect Hamas. So we first, indirectly and directly through Israel, help establish Hamas. Then we have election, then Hamas becomes dominant, so we have to kill them. You know, it just doesn't make sense. During the 80s, you know, we were allied with Osama bin Laden. And we were contending with the Soviets. It was at that time our CIA thought it was good if we radicalized the Muslim world. So we financed the madrasa schools to radicalize the Muslims in order to compete with the Soviets. There's too much blowback. There's a lot of reasons why we should oppose this resolution. It is not in the interest of the United States. It's not in the interest of Israel either.
Okay, there we are. That is Ron Paul. And, you know, it's something because, you know, the boogeymen that our media tells us right now in the Middle East, Al-Qaeda and the Taliban, likewise were put together with a lot of help from the CIA. So, let's see, you... problem-reaction-solution, I would say, is what is there. Okay, let's move on to Obama. This is a really disheartening piece, but I'm not surprised. I don't have any faith in this fellow. And the more I learn about him, the more I believe that he's as corrupt as they come. He's just a better actor. This comes to us from June 08 on the campaign trail. Obama was at the AIPAC conference, policy conference, and they are perhaps the largest pro-Israel lobby in the States. And that stands for the American-Israel Public Affairs Committee. And very, very frustrating what Obama has to say. Basically that regardless of what Israel ever does, we will always back you 100% forever and ever. And that is just absolutely disgusting. Hard to believe that... it's not hard to believe. You know, I mean, for how long have presidents had to take that stand? You know, if you don't, you're not going to make it, you know. If you say you're not a Christian, you're not going to make it. There's just funny boundaries set up. And, you know, this whole Israel thing, it's not one that I talk about, well, very seldom, as a matter of fact, because so many people seem to get their religion confused with this country. And I think they're different things, and a lot of people beg to differ, and that's how it is. So we did have a little audio problem with that Ron Paul piece, and that is the first time I've gotten that funky electronic feedback sound. So hopefully the rest of these clips are going to play nice and clean. So here we are, Obama, from June 08, talking at the AIPAC policy conference, where he kisses their ass. That's exactly what he does. So here we go.
It is great to see so many good friends from all across the country. I want to congratulate Howard Friedman, David Victor, and Howard Kaur on an extraordinary conference and on the completion of a new headquarters just a few blocks away. I want to thank my great friend, Lee Rosenberg, who has been just tireless in working on behalf of the U.S.-Israel relationship. I want to make a point of acknowledging our extraordinary Speaker of the House, Speaker Nancy Pelosi, who spoke just before me. And how important her words were, and particularly in remembering the three soldiers that are still held by Hezbollah. We will not forget them, and we will bring them home. That is a priority of U.S. policy and Israel policy. I also have to note that we had an eventful night last night. And my staff and I may still be a little bleary-eyed, but we have a number of supporters in this room, and we're very grateful to them. And I also want to acknowledge that following my speech, I know that you are going to have the great pleasure of hearing from an extraordinary candidate and an extraordinary public servant. And I want to publicly acknowledge Hillary Clinton for the outstanding race that she has run. She is a true friend of Israel. She is a great senator from New York. She is an extraordinary leader of the Democratic Party, and she has made history alongside me over the last 16 months. So I'm very proud to have competed against her. Before I begin, I also want to mention that I know some have been receiving provocative emails that have been circulated throughout the Jewish communities across the country, and a few of you may have gotten them. They're filled with tall tales and dire warnings about a certain candidate for president, and all I want to say is let me know if you see this guy named Barack Obama, because he sounds pretty scary. But if anybody's been confused by these emails, I want you to know that today I will be speaking from my heart and as a true friend of Israel. And I know that when I visit AIPAC, I'm among friends. Good friends. Friends who share my strong commitment to make sure that the bond between the United States and Israel is unbreakable today, unbreakable tomorrow, unbreakable forever. One of the many things that I admire about AIPAC is that you fight for this common cause from the bottom up. The lifeblood of AIPAC is here in this room. Grassroots activists of all ages, from all parts of the country, who come to Washington year after year to make your voices heard. Nothing reflects the face of AIPAC more than the 1,200 students who have traveled here to make it clear to the world that the bond between Israel and the United States is rooted in more than our shared national interests. It's rooted in the shared values and shared stories of our people. And as president, I will work with you to ensure that it is this bond that is strengthened. You know, I first became familiar with the story of Israel when I was 11 years old. I had a camp counselor who was an American Jew, but had lived in Israel for a time. And he told me stories of this extraordinary land. And I learned of the long journey and steady determination of the Jewish people to preserve their identity through faith, family, and culture. Year after year, century after century, Jews carried on their traditions and their dreams of a homeland in the face of impossible odds. The story made a powerful impression on me. I had grown up without a sense of roots. My father was black. He was from Kenya. He had left when I was two. My mother was white, and she was from Kansas, and I'd moved with her to Indonesia and then back to Hawaii. And in many ways, I didn't know where I came from. So I was drawn to the belief that you could sustain a spiritual, emotional, and cultural identity. And I understood the Zionist idea that there is always a homeland at the center of our story. And I also... I also learned about the horror of the Holocaust and the terrible urgency it brought to the journey home to Israel. For much of my childhood, I lived with my grandparents. My grandfather had served in World War II, and so had my great uncle. He was a Kansas boy who probably never expected to see Europe, let alone the horrors that awaited him there. And for months after he came home from Germany, he remained in a state of shock, alone with the painful memories that wouldn't leave his head. You see, my great uncle had been part of the 89th Infantry Division, the first Americans to reach a Nazi concentration camp. They liberated Ohrdruf, part of Buchenwald, on an April day in 1945. The horrors of that camp go beyond our capacity to imagine. Tens of thousands died of hunger, torture, disease, or plain murder, part of the Nazi killing machine that killed 6 million people. When the Americans marched in, they discovered huge piles of dead bodies and starving survivors. General Eisenhower ordered Germans from the nearby towns to tour the camp so they could see what was being done in their name. He ordered American troops to tour the camp so they could see the evil they were fighting against. He invited congressmen and journalists to bear witness, and he ordered that the photographs and films be made. Explaining his actions, Eisenhower said he wanted to produce first-hand evidence of these things. If ever in the future there develops a tendency to charge these allegations merely to propaganda.
Hey, welcome back. The little piggies are on. That must mean it's time for the weather update. Of course, you're listening to CHLY 101.7 FM in Nanaimo. Let's see what the Weather Network has to tell us. This was posted at 8 o'clock, and it's now 9:25. And they were saying at 8 it was 1 degree with a few clouds. And then Sunday, back to rain, so there's going to be one... really nice day smacked in between some rain. That's what they say. I don't really believe them very much, but why is that? Why can't they get the weather accurate anymore? You know, apparently many years ago they said that they could have it accurate within 3 days, and now, boy, they have a hard time getting tomorrow accurate. So there we are. That is the weather update, and it's brought to you by, in part, the three financial supporters that this show has. Unbought and Unbossed, and they are three fantastic truth groups in Western Canada. There's a fund drive / membership drive coming up in maybe 2 months or so, and I really hope that I can add a few more truth groups to alongside Victoria, Edmonton, and Fraser Valley. Thank you for your support of CHLY. Much appreciated. Let's become the media. Okay, we're going to move on now. I called in on a show on CHLY this Monday, 2 days ago, the Dr. Lake Show, and it's about mental health. And when I tuned in, they were discussing happiness. And as a truther and advocate for everything groovy, quite often I am frustrated that I am not making a larger difference. And I asked these women, both Dr. Lake and her usual co-host, Linda Ogle, for some advice, and they gave me some really good advice. So I'm going to pass this on to the other 9/11 truthers and persons interested in social justice issues to, don't put your ambitions too high, apparently. So you don't be realistic. You know, you don't set yourself up for failure and... you know, cherish the small victories that you do have. So those are some of the suggestions, but I would like you to hear the rest. This was quite a nice segment. I was hoping to meet with Dr. Lake last night at our CHLY programmers meeting, but she was not there, unfortunately. So so there we are. Let's get on to this. And when we come back... we're going to listen to the Jim Mars lecture, and that will go to the end of the hour, the end of the show. So here we are, myself asking a question on the Dr. Lake Show, and a pretty good response. So that's what we're going to do. Here we go.
And we do have a caller. Turn that on, and you're on the air.
Oh, hi.
Hello.
Thanks for taking my call.
Oh, happy to hear you.
Well,
oh.
You're talking about happiness, and that's something yeah. I greatly would like to have more of in my life.
Uh-huh.
And I guess I'm interested in your feedback on this short story I will tell you.
Okay.
I'm very much interested in social justice and equality issues and political fairness in all senses of the word.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm teaching myself history, and what I'm finding is that it's much different than what we get on our corporate media news.
Mm-hmm.
And it's very disparaging. And I don't want to be pessimistic, and I would like to hope for the best, but yet the current take on, revisionist history, in particular the 9/11 lie, the world is much different than it's portrayed officially.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm part of a movement that's trying to awaken others. And hopefully we can gather enough momentum in which we can, I guess, kind of force our government and society into being responsible and, practice democratic qualities.
Mm-hmm.
And it's such a steep climb that it's very frustrating for many persons in this truth community.
Yes.
Can you share any thoughts on how, looking at history as being, very sad, and I want to find some happiness, and I want to be able to keep going and continue, without getting burnt out.
Yes.
In my quest for, social justice issues.
Yes, and I think, there's a value to pursuing social justice issues, but there's a hook in it too, right? Because then you're going to run into all the barriers and all the roadblocks into your pursuits, and that's going to add to your frustration, right?
Absolutely.
Yeah, and so part of it, and it's a tricky one what you're saying, because there's an investment. I work with people of varying levels, and I have to, my pursuits or my goal is to help people. But I can't always do that. And so in the sense that you do your best, there's a level of still fighting for the cause, but being able to have some kind of ability to step back and kind of look at humanity from a different perspective. Because I think it's really hard not to get caught in that vortex of anger and resentment over the decisions, the unfairness, what people are doing. And it we can tell that story 100 times about how unfair it is. It doesn't change it, right?
And I think once you're feeling someone else's pain, carrying it as though it's your own, you can't help them as well. I think of Bishop Tutu, I guess, and one of the things that strikes you about this man who has been through such hardship, such injustice, has been very socially active around those injustices. And now his role in the Truth Commissions, something that keeps coming across about this man is his joy.
Mm-hmm.
And somehow it is the energy that gives mm-hmm. people hope that things can change. And sometimes when you hear of all the injustice, I think I feel I don't even deserve to be happy. Like to pursue these, it all seems so superficial compared mm-hmm. to the horrible injustices that happen all the time to people. It's almost like you feel you should be suffering them too, and yet you can't help if you do.
Mm-hmm.
So that kind of looking at the injustices with some compassion about them coming from fear, them coming from misunderstanding, understanding where they come from.
Because people have lots of blind spots and they're not able to see everything. I think of Nelson Mandela, because Nelson Mandela was someone who had 20 years in prison. Was it 20? Something like that. And I think How challenging for someone like that not to come out with a lot of rage and anger.
And bitterness
mm. over kind of injustices and taking a proactive stance, which it sounds like that's what you're doing.
Well, I'm doing my best, and it sounds as if you're suggesting that a balance needs to be found.
I think you need to allow yourself joy in the energy that you're giving to this cause, in fact.
Mm. Well, I certainly enjoy learning history, teaching myself history.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not that there's a whole lot I can do with it other than, strive to be my brother's keeper if that fits the situation.
Yeah. I mean,
a worthwhile life.
Yeah. I don't have all the answers to the world's injustices, but I'll tell you this, is that in a way, coming to some kind of terms with the fact that that is part of our world, that we are flawed inherently, and that what you're probably seeing is a good reflection of that. So if there's a way for you to kind of do this pursuit, because my concern were if you do this pursuit and you continue to feed into that anger, you might burn out.
Yeah.
Right? You might burn out and just not be able to do it anymore. And I think, being able to find a way to do it and still step back and find that way to have a little bit of, look at these other people that are doing all these things. And they all have, many people have blind spots, right? And you can do the best you can. You're not going to be able to change all their blind spots. What matters is that you make an impact.
The problem with history is it doesn't record all the quiet acts of heroism, all the quiet acts of caring.
Mm-hmm.
Those are the things that don't get recorded. They don't appear to be big enough, and they may be the biggest thing of all.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's a nice thought.
And actually, that is one of the things, probably because of the work I do on I see all the awful things that are done. It doesn't please me at all, right? But I really am inspired by seeing that there is goodness, there are some good people, there are people out there, and you are making right now your little imprint in the world. And it doesn't matter so much that you imprint on everybody. What matters is that you affect somebody.
Mm-hmm.
And so if that is what you can do, and if you can accomplish that in this journey, rather than focusing on what you're not accomplishing, who you're not getting through to.
Right.
So
count all the small victories.
Small victories are actually a lot bigger than what you think. And because it spreads from one person, it has a ripple effect. And it spreads from one person to another. And that, even in my work, that's all I tell myself. What matters is that ripple effect. And if you pursue this and you see only what you're not achieving, if your ambitions are higher than what you're actually feasibly as a human being able to do, you're just going to experience frustration and let down. And I think it's about really, giving yourself a pat on the back for those small differences you make and trusting that they're going to have an impact and perhaps a little bit more of a step back compassion for those areas where there are blind spots and people can't hear or receive what it is you have to say.
And if you become part of a community of compassion, that always spreads.
Well, thank you. I really like that idea of appreciating the small victories.
Absolutely.
So.
And they do go a lot further, I think, than you imagine them. Because I see, I get to deal with the people who talk about the positive impacts of others that I'm sure the other people aren't even aware of it. Absolutely acknowledging.
And the other thing I just want to say, because we're just about wrapping up, but I want to say thank you for caring. I hope there's a lot of people out there.
Yeah,
who
we
do.
Need more people like you.
Because they say evil thrives when good people do nothing. So thank you for doing something.
Absolutely.
Well, thank you for taking my call and the wise words.
Oh, thank you. And call back anytime.
Thank you.
Okay, bye-bye. Good night. Very, very poignant. Very poignant, right?
Yeah,
it sounds like it's.
You touched on a struggle.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
When you can feel, when you're aware of a lot of pain that's going on, how do you maintain the joy? How do you maintain the happiness? Yeah. Because, in fact, that does lead you to a better place from which to give.
Yes. Well, and, you know, I have to say that, I mean, I have great admiration for people that cause. Certainly there's been times in my life where I fought for a cause. And, you know, you come across that experience sometimes of not having the greatest impact that you wish you did. My experience is that, you know, if I can touch one person in my life, if I've made a difference, then you know you made a difference for more than one person. And it just, it is very important to be able to acknowledge that.
Also know that if you're the well that's giving water, then you've got to prime the pump. So you have to be getting your needs met, your kind of sense of joy in order to give.
Absolutely.
And it becomes your responsibility.
Absolutely. And, you know, on that note, we got to go.
Yes.
Hey, we gotta go, indeed. So thank you to the ladies from the Dr. Lake Show, which is Dr. Lake and Linda Ogle, O-G-A-L. So there you go, 9/11 Truthers. Hopefully that sets you in place fairly well. Okay, what we're gonna do now, I'm gonna finish the show with this Jim Mars lecture that I promised you. It might be from 2004, maybe 2005, out of San Francisco. I'm pretty sure it's one that Carol Brulé put on. So Jim Mars, again, he's an author, a journalist, a researcher, free thinker. Give him a look and a listen. So here we are. That's going to do it for me on the Unbought and Unbossed show. Of course, you're listening to CHLY 101.7 FM in Nanaimo. Let me give my web address one more time if you want to visit that to find out what was on each show, as well as getting links to various YouTube clips and websites and so on and so forth. It is at unbossed.livejournal.com. So there we are, friends. I'll see you next week, and be well out there.
It's really a pleasure to be with y'all today. And I want you to understand right off the bat that probably you and I might not agree on a lot of things, because I'm just kind of an old redneck from Texas, okay? But I'm not stupid, and I have gotten an education, and I do study. And also, I was a little concerned about coming to speak to y'all, because I thought, what the heck am I going to tell you all that you don't already know? But I have a few items that you might not have heard. Plus, I'm going to see if I can kind of wrap this up and get this into where we are now, since we're kind of coming down the home stretch on this program. Another thing I might add is, a little aside, this is absolutely the first gathering, the first convention, the first such event as this, that I paid my own way to come. Sure, I get my expenses and my travel, okay? But I felt like this was important enough, and if you people feel like it's important enough to get out, bring yourselves here, try to hear what's going on, then I feel like I need to get here to share with you a little bit I know. First thing I'm going to do is tell you, the Post Turtle's kind of fun, and you know, in many ways, this is kind of a hoot. I mean, this would be a gigantic joke if it wasn't so damn serious. And I'm looking at a news item that just crossed my desk as I was heading out the door. It seems that a 12-person Earning Mental Health Advisory Team has just issued a 38-page report on the issues faced by U.S. soldiers in Iraq. Among these is some 35 suicides by our troops in Iraq, including several women. That should tell you right there that there's some problem going on here. There were very few suicides among U.S. troops in World War II. And that's because they knew they were fighting for something. But these people over in Iraq, you know, they're there. Most of them are reservists. They didn't want to be there in the first place. And I want to tell you something. This is not an issue of support our troops or don't support our troops. I know I totally support our troops, and I feel most of you folks do too. It's not their fault. And I tell you what, I really feel for them, because if you think Gulf War syndrome and all the hundreds of thousands of casualties, both mental and physical, that we're seeing now in the wake of the first Gulf War or something, you wait until these folks get back over here. They're facing twice as much depleted uranium shells, twice as much pathogens, twice as much sickness, twice as much privation. It's going to be a bad thing. And that leads us to the leadership, because that's where the problem is. I've heard mentioned in this program the arsenal of hypocrisy. What an apt name. Bush lands on an aircraft carrier wearing his flight suit. By the way, everybody realizes he didn't fly the plane. Okay, he just rode with one of the top aces. And he tells us to go and support our troops. And yet, what does he do? He cuts veterans' benefits. All right? Recently, we had a little controversy kick up because he launched his 2004 re-election campaign with TV ads that played on emotions by showing the firefighters and the rescue workers at the Ground Zero in New York on 9/11. That brought howls of protest from firefighters' associations and from survivors, saying that they didn't think, they thought it was extremely poor taste to use that for his election. Well, folks, it's worse than that. A year ago, he blocked legislation that included millions of dollars for health benefits for the rescue workers and the firefighters at Ground Zero. He's a typical politician. You know how you tell if a politician's lying to you, right? Their mouth's moving. Now, moving right along. How do we get in this mess? Well, it's real simple. I'm going to quote a former world leader who said, naturally, the common people don't want war. But after all, it's the leaders of the country who determine the policy. It's always a simple matter to drag people along, whether it's a democracy or a fascist dictatorship or a parliament or a communist dictatorship. Voice or no voice, the people can always be brought to the bidding of the leaders. This is easy. All you have to do is tell them they're being attacked and denounce the pacifists for lack of patriotism and exposing the country to danger. It works the same in every country. Who said that? Former Luftwaffe Air Marshal Nazi Hermann Göring at the Nuremberg War Crime Trials. The more things change, the more they stay the same, right? What's going on now is nothing new. Here's a news clipping from 1987, and we see our old buddy Oliver North as he's trotting out before Congress to lie his teeth off, and then proudly admit, I was smiling, what was it I lied to you? Okay? Nazi. But I want to read the first two paragraphs of this story so you'll know that what's happening now has been in plans and has been in the works for many years. Marine Lieutenant Colonel Oliver North helped draft a plan in 1984, ironically enough, to impose martial law on the United States in the event of an emergency, inspiring a sharp protest by then Attorney General William French Smith. The secret plan called for suspension of the Constitution, turning control of the government over to the little-known Federal Emergency Management Agency, appointment of military commanders to run state and local governments, and the declaration of martial law in the event of such a crisis as nuclear war. Okay, I understand that. Violent and widespread internal dissent. Wait a minute. Or national opposition to a U.S. military invasion abroad. Maybe it's a good thing we didn't protest Iraq too much, or they would have declared martial law. So what we now know in relation to 9/11 is that foreknowledge and foreplanning, the evidence is overwhelming. The FBI, they knew what was going on. They were sending notes and messages right up the thing. Hey, guys are out here taking flight lessons. Seem to be Arab terrorists. I think they could fly these planes into buildings. All that's flowing up to the FBI. CIA, it was coming in from all over the world. Even the Taliban tried to warn us of what was going on. Okay? And, of course, need I mention the project, Operation Majinga, you know, 1996 in the Philippines. They busted an Al-Qaeda cell. And here were plans to hijack airplanes and fly them into landmarks, including the World Trade Center. Need I mention that in 1993, they actually bombed the World Trade Center. And in their courtroom trials, they actually boasted. They said, well, we didn't do it right this time, but we'll do it right next time. And they have the effrontery to tell us that, gee, who could have imagined they would do something like this? It's ridiculous. How many of you remember a day or two after 9/11, the major media was all talking about the suspicious short selling of stocks? Right? We all know about that. That shows, that proves, especially in American Airlines, United, and their insurance carriers. This proves that somebody had foreknowledge, and we're going to track that with the FBI, and we're going to see if that doesn't lead to Osama bin Laden. You hadn't heard any more about it, had you? Because it didn't track Osama bin Laden. It tracked the people who were connected to our CIA. And you don't hear about that, of course. And what about Israel? Well, heck yeah, they do. Israel knows everything. And by the way, recently I saw a comparison of the intelligence budgets as best to be estimated. We spent, in the year preceding 9/11, something like $40 billion, that's with a B, $1 billion on our intelligence apparatus. We've got about two dozen alphabet agencies, CIA, FBI, NRO, DARPA, you know, NSA. It goes on and on and on and on. And they can't figure out what's going on. You know what the yearly budget of the Islamic Mossad is? Only about $375 million. And yet, by all accounts, and by everybody I've ever talked to around the world, said they are the most efficient intelligence service in the world. Did they know 9/11 was coming? Well, heck yeah. How do we know this? Because their own internet message thing, Indigo, messages were going, get out of Manhattan, okay? They had Israelis, as has been pointed out in the presentations, filming the World Trade Center, you know. They had the 400-man art student spy ring that was rounded up in this country that was not only spying on 9/11 in New York and Manhattan, but also spying on our military installations. Okay? And most of you probably never even read about that. It just barely made a blip in the news media. But just think what would have happened if that had been a 400-man Iraqi spy ring. Oh, man. It would have beat us over the head with it. Now, that leads so far out people to conclude, well, then Israel was behind the attack. I don't buy that, but I think they did know it was coming. And the question becomes, did they warn our leadership? Well, obviously, I think they did. All you have to do is look at the facts, look at the circumstances. August 2001, John Ashcroft announced that he's quit flying commercial aircraft. Okay, he'll only fly government chartered aircraft. About that same time, Pentagon officials decided that they're not going to fly commercial aircraft anymore. They're only going to take government charter flight for security reasons. There's even a story I'm still tracking that on the night before 9/11 that several Pentagon generals canceled their flights, okay, for the next morning. And, of course, we all know the story of San Francisco Mayor Woody Brown. He was warned, okay, don't fly to New York, okay? Thanks, folks, for telling the rest of us. You know, give me a break. Now, we've also heard about Afghanistan, very well presented. That was about two things. They wanted the oil pipeline through there, okay? And they were told in negotiations in early 2001, according to NIAC, one of the negotiators, that he was told by some of the Americans that if you don't accept our carpet and go now, you're going to get a carpet of bombs come in the fall. And sure enough, they did. We also know from the European media that 95% of the opium, the poppy crops, the opium fields in Afghanistan were destroyed by the Taliban. Yeah, they were probably creeps, idiots, and religious zealots, but they were religious zealots, and they did away with the heroin crop. Can't have that. That would disrupt the drug trade all over the world. And we know that all of our top-ranking people, Bushes, the Clintons, all like that. Now, you can't necessarily say that they're drug winners, but they all profit from their investment in the banking industry and the flow of the drug money through the banking system. If there truly was a meaningful and legitimate war on drugs, that It's a simple matter to go into the banking system, identify the drug money, and close it off. But they don't do that, do they? No, they want to just bust people on the street and set up an apparatus and strip of our rights and of our freedoms. Okay? And now we know Iraq. Okay? We were told we're going into Iraq because we have to bring them freedom and democracy. When have we ever done that? You know, 50 years of bad foreign policy, we have yet to bring anybody freedom and democracy. So the next thing is, oh, well, we got to go in there because he's got weapons of mass destruction. No, he didn't. We knew that before we went in there, right? Scott Ritter owned weapons of mass destruction. They don't have any. You have weapons of mass destruction. They don't have any. Let me tell you how bad the duplicity was. The Bush administration says, oh, well, we've got a report here from the International Atomic Energy Agency that says he's 6 months away from building, 6 weeks, I think it was, away from building a nuclear weapon. Well, some enterprising news media actually went to the International Atomic Energy Agency, and they said, no, we don't have a report like that. So they went back to the White House, I think it was R.A. Fleischer, and says, oh, well, we were talking about a report that issued in 1991. 1991, I believe 6 weeks has passed since then. Okay, so they go back to the White House. And they went down and they go to the International Atomic Energy Agency and they said, no, we didn't issue a report like that in 1991 either. So in fact, the only report that we issued was in 1998. And what we stated in that report was that due to the devastation of the Gulf War in 91, we didn't think Saddam Hussein had the capability of building a nuclear weapon. So everybody told us it was bogus. Except Fox News and CNN and NBC. And just drowned us in propaganda. So it's all BS. So the next thing is, well, we got to go there for the oil. You know, got to have oil. You know, we're running out of oil. Oil's getting expensive. And there's some truth to that. But the truth that we had to go get the oil in Iraq is bogus. Because, number one, we were only getting 16% of our imported oil from Iraq to begin with. And now we're not even getting that. Because when the war started, the supply shut down, the pipeline shut down. And now they're bombing it every few days. And it's intermittent supply. So everything we were told about why we had to go to Iraq was bogus. Except perhaps, and I'm not going to go into this, but there's a hell of a story here. Amazing new archaeological discoveries made in Iraq by French and German archaeology teams starting in 1999 and lasting until early 2003. Now, and in all, everything they found, all these ancient tablets, ancient scrolls, any of you that are familiar with Zachariah Sitchin's material or some of the ideas along here, we know that there apparently was some high technology that was known in vast antiquity. Okay? Now, where would they have taken all that? They took it to the Iraqi National Museum, but it had just been found, hadn't been cataloged, hadn't been cleaned up, translated, so it was all in the basement. According to the Marine Colonel who investigated the looting of the Iraqi National Museum, 10,000 pieces were taken out of the basement, and they've only recovered less than 600. What was in there? Could that be why we had to make a beeline for Baghdad? Anyway, what we know is that all this was planned long in advance. This was the Defense Guidance Policy Paper under the Cheney Defense Department during the first Bush administration. Said, we need to move into Afghanistan. We need to move into Iraq. These were the plans on the drawing board. All they needed was, as Zygmunt Brzezinski said in his book, The Great Game, another Pearl Harbor type attack. Well, we got that on 9/11, didn't we? And what they said at the time was, and it still holds true today, is that attack, so well coordinated with the attendant stripping away of normal security measures, required state sponsorship. Well, who would have been that state? Certainly wasn't Afghanistan. Certainly wasn't Iraq. Well, think about it, folks. Who created Al-Qaeda? CIA. And the Saudis. Who created Osama bin Laden? He's a Saudi and a CIA army. And it's just there. Are they still working there? So now, who's behind it? Who was 15 of the 19 identified hijackers? Saudis. Why are they keeping 28 pages hidden from the report? What's in that report? The Saudis. Senator Bob Graham of Florida says the reality is that that foreign government, meaning Saudi Arabia, was much more directly involved in not only the financing, but the provision of support, transportation, housing, introduction to a network which gave support to the terrorists. He says scores of contacts occurred between the 9/11 hijackers and operatives of foreign officials. They were not rogue agents, he said, but were being directed by persons of significant responsibility within that government. Saudi Arabia, and who is a long-time, close, social and business friends of the Saudis? The Bush family. Now, shouldn't we be perking up a little bit and demanding some kind of fair investigation? All right, let me tell you how bad it is. First off, we now have captured Abu Zabada a year ago. He is the top-ranking Al-Qaeda operative, and when he finally spilled the beans, what did he say? He was working for the Saudis. So Al-Qaeda is still working for the Saudis and under the control of the CIA and probably the Mossad. And it's also homegrown. How many of y'all know the name Specialist Derek Lawrence Peterson? Never heard of him, have you? About a year ago, he was arrested in Jacksonville, Florida, late one night, stopped by an alert deputy sheriff. He's dressed all in black. He's got a shoulder holster with a .45. He's got a 12-gauge shotgun in the back and bomb-making materials. They tracked him back to a Florida power and light station where he planted a bomb. Okay? Now, how come you haven't heard of Specialist Derek Peterson before?